You're listening to an IOE podcast,
powered by UCL Minds.
This is Research for the Real World. Conversations with researchers about the paths they've taken to shape our everyday lives.
This is Research for the Real World. Hello, I'm Dr. Carrie Wong, an assistant professor of psychology at the Department of Psychology and Human Development at IOE, UCL's Faculty of Education and Society. In this season of Research for the Real World, we want to highlight research that looks into the lives of refugees and asylum seekers, considering their experiences in the UK in terms of care, housing, education access, and human rights, and making recommendations based on evidence. So on this episode, I'm delighted to be talking to Dr. Rachel Rosen. Rachel is an associate professor in sociology of childhood based at the UCL Social Research Institute here at the IOE. Rachel also completed her PhD at the IOE in 2014, and prior to this, she received her Master's of Arts from the University of East London. Her research, teaching, and public engagement activities intersect the sociology of childhood and materialist feminist thought, with a particular focus on unequal childhoods, social reproduction, and migration in neoliberal border regimes. Rachel has been funded by the British Academy and the Leverhulme Trust to examine migrant mothers and children with no recourse to public funds. Most recently, she is the co-lead to an ESRC-funded project on children caring on the move, which we will hear about more. These are topical areas of research with real applications to the world today, so I can't wait to hear from Rachel. And Rachel is also joined by two peer researchers, Mika, who is an undergraduate student, and Guli. Rachel, Mika, and Guli, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much, Carrie. It's great to be here.
Great. So maybe starting off with Rachel, just to help our listeners get to know you a little bit more. How did you become involved in education?
Well, I've been at UCL since 2014, and my teaching and my research have really grown out of my experience of being involved in migrant organizing or pro-migrant justice organizations in community-based groups that are doing work around childhood and particularly around child migration. Those interests in community-based groups really led me to take a sociological perspective on the world and think about the sorts of research that might be involved in both understanding the world, but also might contribute to changing the world. So I'm very much interested in change-oriented research and education.
That's fantastic. And I know that you're currently working on a project called Children Caring on the Move. Can you explain to our listeners who are less familiar with the terms, perhaps, what does the term care mean in this instance?
Thanks. That's a great question. I mean, in fact, that's in part what the research is all about, is what does care actually mean? The project, just to give you a little bit of a background, the project is interested in finding out about the experiences of unaccompanied children and young people who come to the UK. These are young people who have come to the UK without parents or guardians. Once they're in the UK, there's an obligation of the British state to provide care and support for these children. Now, what ends up happening and what our research is interested in exploring is, what is the care that's provided? How is it experienced? What is it like for children who are on the move and young people who are on the move? And so we've spent a lot of time talking to children and young people about what care means, about the care that they should receive, but often feel that they don't or often do not experience, as well as the care that they offer to others, the care that children themselves are involved in providing. So we've heard about care as a form of support. We've heard about care as advice. We've heard about care as translating. We've heard about care as welcoming and cooking for others. Mika and Guli, would you like to add anything else about what we've heard about care? What care is or what care isn't?
There are so many things actually we can add and explain, like there is a good part from the charities, like from the community they was receiving, but at the same time, from the responsible part as like governmental things, there wasn't like enough support or care they supposed to receive.
I think that's a really important point that Mika's making about the distinction between the sort of formal provision of care and the informal care that we often see. So the formal systems and obligations for a duty of care for children that we might see, say, provided by or expected to be provided by social workers, by foster carers, and so forth. And then we see the more informal forms of care that young people, children and young people are providing themselves to each other, sometimes filling gaps in provision, sometimes adding to provision, and so forth.
Mm-hmm. That's super interesting. And I guess through those, what the children are saying, you kind of start to get a glimpse of what the definition of care means or how they're, what their expectations perhaps of care is. And I wondered, you know, and this links to the next question about kind of how you went about doing the research, because I'd imagine very difficult to maybe access and have these conversations with the children. Can you talk a little bit more about that process and how you went about doing so?
Sure. So, I mean, one of the things I think that's really important to say about the Children Caring on the Move project is that it's a participatory or a collaborative project. And so from the outset, our way of thinking about research has always been sort of framed by the phrase, nothing about us without us. So the idea that if this is research about children and young people who have come to the UK on their own, that children and young people who've come to the UK on their own or have migrated to the UK should be involved directly in the research. And so that's how we've worked. We've worked with a group of young researchers or peer researchers in two locations to design and carry out our research. And now we're in the process of analyzing what we found. So Mika, do you want to say a little bit about some of the different interviews that we've done?
So we had three different type of interviews. The first was the a care object, where was like with Rachel or other colleagues of research. Because at that time it was a pandemic time, like we did the interview over the Zoom online. So it was quite hard. We wasn't sure like we could do or not, but there was any like options to do, so we decided to do online. So reaching the young people through the like WhatsApp or like social medias to arrange the appointment interview, it was a bit hard. But once we started, the first subject was about the care object, and we was like asking them, could they bring any object which is close to them or like meaning for them as a care. So it was different things, like it could be a necklace, a pen, or anything, even the picture, money from their country. The one of the young person mentioned that his mother gave to him money from his country to be able to just like when he will travel to buy some food or something, but he never spent that money because it was a care from his mother as a memory of like the care and the love he was receiving, and he's still keeping that money, which was incredible. So it was the first one. The second part was the day in life, which is we asked the young people, like unaccompanied young people, participants, to take pictures of daily life, what they usually doing and during the day, for what they're spending, with who they're spending the time. So based on that, we was taking the second interview as well in online over the Zoom. And the third interview was in person. Luckily, it happened actually in 2021-2022. We could arrange the meeting in person to see, there was a interview, like they could show that they are like places where they spend time most oftenly, it was who they spending time. So it was kind of the like similar as the second interview of their in day life, but more in person to just find out. Also, all these three steps, which is we took from the same people, participants, it was the to find out actually what is their current situation. Obviously, it takes 3 years, 2 years. So some of them receive their status, like refugee status. Some of them get actually in a worse condition. They kind of become a homeless. Some of them had moved from the hostel they used to live for temporary to receiving the temporary accommodation. So it was, there was like different like condition and situations. So it was really interesting to find out what the steps, what they was like.
That's super fascinating. And so maybe a follow-up question, if I may, will, you know, say our listeners, if they're curious to see some of these objects as well, will there be a way for them to access this? Or are you guys planning on showcasing some of these, you know, photos and collages and things like that? What's the plan for the results, I guess?
Well, I mean, we have lots of plans for sharing what we've found. But I think one of the things that we're talking about is producing a book, which would include potentially some images of the objects that young people have shared with us as part of their interviews. I think it does say a lot about what actually care means to young people. So quite often, one of the things we've been hearing about is that in the formal systems, care is often treated like a checklist, right? So have I done this? Check. Have I done that? Check. But I think you could hear from the story that Mika told that what is experienced as real care is care that's thoughtful, emotional. An expression that we've heard a lot is that somebody goes above and beyond and really listens to and responds to what young people are saying and doesn't make them feel the sort of the subject of suspicion or make them feel scared.
And so Mika and Guli, you know, as peer researchers, can I ask you guys how you actually got involved in all of this? And I mean, during the interviews as well, what was that experience like for you? Go ahead, Guli.
As a peer researcher, when I came to UK, I have never thought that I'll get an opportunity like this to join some people like here and get some colleagues and do some work, contribute what we are best at to share with other people, whether it's financial, whether it's mentally, or even some advices. And thankfully, I got this opportunity and I met some people through the Red Cross. I used to go to Red Cross, then one day some lovely people just showed up and it was Lucy, Rachel and some others. Then after they explained to us, oh, we are going to do a huge project. When they explained it at the moment, I just loved it. Then I wanted to share what I have and I wanted to know what I don't know. And it gave me both of them. I shared and I contributed what like good at, and I learned many other things from my colleagues, from Richard, from Lucy, from other people. It feels so nice. It satisfies me. Even if it's not beneficial for myself, at least it may be beneficial for some others. So like we say, caring is not about just yourself being selfish. I care about myself and others too. That's what I wanted to do. And thanks for everyone who helped me, who listened to me, who taught me anything. Thanks.
Great. It's our pleasure to have you on the podcast as well, Guli. So I'm so glad that you're here sharing your experience with us. And Mika, did you have anything to add? How did you get involved, Mika? And what is the experience like for you?
So I have get involved through the Red Cross as a Guli as well. It was such a great experience. I was lucky to work with great people. But at the beginning, it was quite unclear what is research actually means, because I have never heard about the research. I was quite surprised that it will take for 3 years. But at the final stage, I have learned how to interview young people, how to be ethical, discuss and analyze and talk about tough and hard topics. It teaches me how to be more careful and understand the situation of their situation. I'm accompanying young participants' situations. I realized also, like, as an asylum seeker myself, that I'm not the only one who struggle and the people have harder situations than me. I have become more friends with the one of them. As a team, it's it wasn't just basically research for me. It was more than the research. Like, our topic of is about the care. So I also was receiving care from my colleagues, from my team, from Rachel, from like other colleagues. So it was really nice to having this experience.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. Yes, we heard you loud and clear. Thanks so much, Mika and Guli. I think maybe a follow-up question would be, would you guys continue doing this even after the project ends? Would you continue to be involved with research, do you think?
Yes, definitely. I would love to continue to do more research because I find really interesting doing research, analyzing, collecting the data. Even one of my, I'm a student, undergraduate student, and one of my essays was about the critically reviewed articles. It was like researching things stuff. And it was quite easy for me to do this work. I really enjoyed because it was quite relative to me. I was knowledgeable what I'm doing. And after that, I realized I would love to do another research based on different topics or like problems, issues. So it's quite enjoyable job.
Fantastic, Mika. Thanks for sharing. And Guli, how about you?
I haven't thought, and I don't think, and I won't think that I'll stop any day. Because that each of us has a nature. So our group, we have nature of caring. We care. It doesn't stop. It grows up. So yeah, I'll stay in this line and I'll be with these people as long as I can. And hopefully one day we'll get results.
That's fantastic to hear. Peer research is becoming the future, you know, research is in the field as well. That's great, Rachel, what you have done as well. So I guess moving on to my next question, I know you guys have co-produced a film called Stories Too Big for a Case File, Unaccompanied Young People Confront the Hostile Environment. Can you tell us a little bit about what that is about and how you got to this moment, environment?
Sure. So I will talk about actually the aim or reasons to making this film. So we made the film to show the how the system actually works. There was the gaps, problems, and the issues. So it wasn't smooth or straightforward as it seems like in the policy or like the, how the media represent asylums or refugees. Our findings in our research is that the unaccompanied young people struggle because of the system. Like, we have heard about the problems with the money, with the clothing, accommodation. So young people struggle even trust their like personal lawyers, social workers, foster families, because the way they was treat them from the social worker side or lawyer side, I mean. So people who are meant to be helping often aren't. So in our film, we want to show that the refugee and asylum-seeking young people have lots of similar experience, despite the fact refugees have the more rights and they receive their like status to be able to live as a, like equally in this country. But despite this fact, we find out actually it's not true. Like they also struggle a lot. They have like literally similar experience as an asylum seeker with money, accommodation. So there was like literally same experience. So we want to try to show that there is a bigger and deeper problem in the system. And in our research, we was hearing about from the young people, I mean, accompanied young people, about the labels, how they dehumanize, how the system dehumanize people, migrants. And often media portrays them negatively or makes label like migrants, asylum seekers in a negative ways. And in the film, we want to challenge this. And we want to show that we migrants, asylums, refugees, we are more than labels and more than a case file in the hands of social worker or the home office hands. And we want to send the message that the things, the system can be improved. That's why the point of making this film, the point of doing this research, actually, to show the reality, the fact there is a gap, there is a problems, there is issues, and by complaining, by saying this, we're hoping we will be able to improve the system in a better way in the future, maybe in a few years. And Rachel will talk about more about the how actually film was made.
Thanks, Mika. Yeah, so, I mean, we came together and we thought about what we were learning from the research. So as Mika said about some of the ways in which individual young people often feel that they're boxed into a small case file, or their story is reduced to just 10 minutes time of somebody who's meant to be caring for them, and that feels really restrictive and dehumanizing. So we talked about how each young person has very individual and unique stories, but at the same time, this idea of the system, so the sort of tangled web of institutions, policies, and people who have a lot of impact and control over the lives of young, unaccompanied young people, and often in quite punitive or suspicious ways. So we wanted in the film to really show both of these things. There's a systemic issue, but also stories that are bigger than a case file. So we came together and thought about those aims. And what we did was we went through our transcripts to think about the kinds of voices of young people in the research that spoke to those themes. And we then revoiced them. So as a research team, we spoke them again for reasons of confidentiality, but also as a part of an analytic process to learn, to really think deeply about what young people were telling us. We recorded those, and we also recorded images to go with these on our mobile phones. And so the effect, working with Louis Brown from East London Cable, who is the director, the effect in the film is a sort of what he calls a lo-fi aesthetic. Right. So the idea is to kind of mirror some of our conversations, research conversations that took place over COVID. So to reflect the kind of disconnections, the static, the rough Wi-Fi that many unaccompanied young people experience because of having no internet access or patchy internet access. So we tried to mimic that with the film. And we put these images and words together in order to create the sense of the kind of complex and multiple stories that young people have to rehumanize and to also show we care. And so the film is really showing these things, but it's also part of the ways in which we're thinking about research, not just on or about care, but research as an act of care. So really an echoing back to young people of some of the ways in which they're understanding, experiencing, and analyzing what's happening to them in England.
Mm-hmm. That sounds incredible. And it's so, so important to give voice to the young people and to have them be involved at every step of the research process, as we can see illustrated in your project, Rachel. And I can't wait to see the film now. Do we know any release dates, or when this might come out, or even a sneak peek preview of this film soon?
The film is out and publicly available. People can watch it following through our website. It's available with translation, so in Arabic, Tigrinya, Albanian, Sarani, and so forth. And we're also doing many, many public talks and screenings of the film, particularly as part of this past Refugee Week, to be able to share the film, but also to talk about some of the broader research findings that are coming out of the Children Caring on the Move project.
Fantastic. So I guess this leads nicely to kind of my closing question of what's next after this? Do you have any new projects on the horizon? Probably many more always, isn't it?
I think as a research team, the Children Caring on the Move research team, we have many projects that are still ongoing. So I think we mentioned that we're going to be putting together a book. We're putting together videos sharing some of the stories and advice that young people have provided during the course of their interviews. And I think that's been one of the really crucial, key, and unique findings of this research, which is that, again, there's a sort of formal care system that's meant to care, but doesn't always, and is often actually quite suspicious and punitive. And at the same time, there are these beautiful and important acts of care that take place between young people. So young people providing all sorts of support, emotional connections, and a sense about being together, not being alone. And so part of what we're trying to do is to really show how important that care is, but also to show how important it is that that care is recognized within policy and professional practice. Often right now, it's not treated as being very relevant. So young people who maybe have traveled across national borders together to arrive in the UK are split up, they're separated, they're sent to different cities and are disconnected from each other. Or young people who know each other and care for each other will visit each other in these different cities, and that's then treated as something suspicious or a problem. And so part of what we're saying from the research is that this care is just so important and central. There's something really valuable about it, and that policy and practice would really be improved and would improve the lives of young people to recognize and support the care that young people themselves are providing.
That's a great message to end on. So I've come to the end of the podcast interview. So thanks so much, Rachel, Mika, Guli, for sharing your insights and experience. It has been really interesting to learn more about the research and your experience and also journey, I think, both as a researcher and also actually the experience of the research, how it has had an impact on your lives as well. You can follow the project on Twitter and Instagram at CCOMstudy to learn more. You can also find links to watch the film and what we've covered today in the episode notes. If you've enjoyed this episode, we have an archive of 16 past seasons. Search IOE Podcast from wherever you get your podcasts from to find episodes of Research for the Real World, as well as more podcasts from IOE. And a quick favor before I go, if you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, we'd really appreciate it if you could please give the IOE podcast a rating. 5 stars would be nice. And this will really help us to spread our reach about such important work. I'm Carrie Wong. Thanks for listening.
Research for the Real World is produced by IOE Marketing and Communications and IOE Research Development. The theme music was created by Rob Cochran. Tatiana Sotero-Diaz is the series advisor. Amy Leibowitz is the series producer. And Jason Ilagan is the executive producer of the IOE podcast.
Thanks so much for downloading and listening to this IOE podcast.